This is Johnny Bluestar. Welcome to Threshold, a global media event. Is the universe just a random dance of atoms? Or is it a manifestation of a supremely intelligent architect? Can its purpose, or our purpose here on Earth, be adequately assessed? Can we commune with it, know its intentions, cooperate with its direction? Here, we define Threshold as a gateway state of awareness, allowing mankind to cross into a place of real cognition. Threshold allows us to approach questions of higher reality through the door of experience rather than mere belief. Welcome to Threshold, where we tear away the veil from commercial media, bringing our audience and participants into another realm of reality and enhanced communication.
We're back on Threshold Radio with novelist attorney Ken Ead, whose latest novel is Beyond All Recognition, the latest in a series of Brent Marks legal thrillers. Also back with us is Sarah Westall, a multi-talented business consultant, technologist, and host of Business Game Changes. Welcome back.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here. I'm always happy to join in on this. This is fun.
Yeah, thanks for having us, Johnny. I really appreciate the opportunity to come and talk to you.
The title of the show is The Sheeple Awake, the nominations and their aftermath. There are no longer any more presumed candidates for the presidential office, as we were speaking of Trump and Clinton before the nominations. The people have spoken, although what that means is being questioned on a dizzying number of levels. I think it is important that we disentangle various events, disclosures, and behavior during this period to assess what the state of the union is and how it is healthy, but also how it is still broken, how it could be fixed. Well, how do we evaluate the extreme activity and enthusiasm of both Sanders and Trump supporters? In what way is this beneficial towards the restoration of representative government, and in what ways does it portend contentiousness and discord as to the meaning of that type of government? If the people don't have their act together, will the absence of corporatocracy really be enough? Does that protect us from another form of demagoguery? What do you think? Sarah?
Well, I think that people are angry. They're angry. They don't think that the government is supporting them or doing things for them. They think the government is doing things for the elite and not for them. And I think that's happening across the board. And they're angry. And I think it's actually a healthy thing if it doesn't turn into civil unrest at a more extreme level, if we can turn it into something productive.
You know, one thing that Plato warned against was democracy. Not that I agree with Plato, but he did bring it up as you know, because sort of the uneducated, quote, rabble will go ahead and get things that are not really favorable to the people of the country. And is that a danger? We have several different sides in crass opposition to each other.
Well, go ahead, but I agree.
I think it's a danger. I think that what we've talked about many times on this program is the importance of education to the electorate. I'm not talking about making everyone putting everyone through a university degree program, but just giving them the basic tools that they need to figure out what's going on. And I think that people are angry. I think it's beneficial that this has been brought to the top. But I think it's important to note that it's going to be business as usual with the elite and the way they do things. Because until you get to your local representative, which your senator and your congressman, and you get them out of there, if they don't agree with your policies and your points of view, it's going to keep happening.
Yeah.
And so in other words, people actually need to do things that make a difference that are constructive. And the elites aren't going to listen if it just seems like it's bad. You know, they're not going to do things that are bad for them. And
no.
So the people need to come up with ways to figure out how to get laws and things through that help.
And they do that by being more active at the local level. I mean, it's a big production, this presidential election, but that's only one form. That's only one of the three branches of government. The part where you have the most say is the one that you can go drop by their office and talk to them. You can send them an email. You can call up and talk to one of their staffers. This should be being done. You know, if you don't like something, you should go straight to your congressman and say, or congresswoman, and say, I don't like this, and I want my position to be noted. And they care about that because they count the votes. If there are enough people don't like something that they're voting on, they won't vote that way anymore, no matter what they're getting, because that means they're not going to be in office in another couple years.
I want to quote from a book called Hoodwinked by John Perkins. As a student in Boston in the 1960s, I avoided walking beside the Charles River because it reeked so badly of pollution. A river in Ohio, the Cuyahoga, caught fire because of the pollutants in it from industrial mills and chemical plants. Since then, we as a nation have convinced corporations to clean up our waters. We have forced corporations to do away with the ozone layer, destroying aerosol cans, banish DDT, open their doors to wider to women and minorities, and stop supporting apartheid in South Africa. Recently, McDonald's, Kentucky Fried Chicken, and other companies announced they were removing trans fats from their food after consumers demanded those changes. All these actions, like the more historical ones, started with us, the people, who were directed primarily at corporations, and after the CEOs got the message, government officials followed. The resulting changes demonstrate that the marketplace is democratic once we decide to see it as such. It's a call to action.
Definitely. Sorry.
Well, because you just don't buy. And well, so the corporations are like, oh gosh, I don't have customers if I don't do this.
We're the biggest consumers in the world.
And then another corporation sees the opportunity and gives them all an alternative. And if the other ones don't change, then they're going to go out of business. So that's why a free marketplace is so important.
Mm-hmm. A free marketplace is important to a point, but also I would say a regulated marketplace is important also.
A regulated one to make it work.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. One that doesn't intrude on the benefits of it.
Yeah.
Protect, because everything is a balance, isn't it? I mean,
yeah, there's going to be a little intrusion on the benefits of it for regulation to work. But I mean, where you don't want to stifle a free market, I think is what you're trying to say, right? I agree.
You don't want to stifle a free market, but you want to prevent GMOs from being running rampant, and you want to prevent.
Well, if there's something bad that's killing us,
and don't poison the water, you know.
Yeah, all those things. Yeah, but when you get rid of innovation and you get rid of all these things because the regulations are so so heavy, that kills us, right?
Yeah, and that's part of the lobbying problem, though, Sarah. Is that the companies that, let's say, a pharmaceutical company, which you know a lot about. Right? There's all kinds of new innovations in drugs that can help people, but we're never going to see them because the old school people who have the solutions that have been the solutions of the past, 20, 30, 40 year old stuff, won't let them.
Well, the really weird thing that I haven't quite figured out is that the average person listens to the establishment as if it's just gospel truth, and they won't listen to alternative things. They're afraid to do anything that's not come out from the establishment. And because you can educate and you can get all this, but it doesn't seem to work for so many people, because mm-hmm. there's, like you were saying, there's so many alternative solutions, and they won't let them. They go to other countries or they do all these things, but I can't tell you how many people I've tried to talk to that I've directed to different things that I've known about that's being done in Europe, where they have amazing healthcare, and the people just won't listen because it's not the establishment are preaching that it's bad.
I think that, you fall back on the idea that what the founding fathers said, that we're going to have a representative democracy, and possibly there's going to be a kind of minority that's informed and educated, and that will really further the democracy and the value of the government. So if we have an educated and informed citizenry, it doesn't necessarily have to be the majority. It has to be an activist informed citizenry.
Well, when if the citizens are more informed, they're going to listen to what they're going to listen more to the activists. Right now they're just being spoon-fed stuff. And the one of my pet peeves, what just got passed through Congress what I'm trying to say, you know, people find out what your people are voting for, is the DARC Act. It's the so-called GMO Labeling Act, and it's basically what Monsanto's decided to put in as legislation so that people don't know what's going into the food.
That
and
is
the
right.
States are being removed from the power to be able to label GMOs, which is taking away local control, states' rights. So, you know, get involved.
Well, I want to mention that, getting back to the events of the day, prior to the actual nominations, there were multiple incidents for each party, intensifying the tensions. Before the actual conventions, of course, there had been the huge, often physical clashes between the pro-Trump and anti-Trump forces and accusations on both sides. Some of the animosity of these two sides were mirrored at an amazing confrontation between Alex Jones and his companion Roger Stone, arch-Trump supporters, when they visited the Young Turks table with Cenk Uygur. Here's a short clip of it.
What, you think the lizard people are in charge?
No.
Is that what you think?
Now your pants are kicking their ass.
Is that what you think?
You're the anti-liberal and you're pissed.
Bullshit.
We're being nice here.
You know what I care about?
You're the one flipping out.
I care about the American people.
Hey, unless you're staff, clear their space, guys. It's their space.
Well, what do you think about that? What do you think about that little event?
I think they're crazy. I mean, come on. Why did if they're not going to get anything accomplished by screaming at each other, they're making the average person think they're crazy.
I think that that's true, and it was an unfortunate thing on both their parts. But there's also the aspect of, you know, the lack of clarity of what they're doing.
Doesn't it go with the whole climate of what the Republican National Convention was all about, and that was like it was a big reality TV show? I mean, if you've let the thing deteriorate to the point where it's a big free for all. You know, I know that my wife's Russian, and in Russia they've got a program where people just kind of scream at each other, and people love it. So this is kind of thing that is going to be great for ratings for Alex Jones and the Young Turks, but
it surely will
not
be,
good
yes.
for the not good for the people.
We're gonna go ahead.
It's not good for the Republican Party, I don't think.
No.
Well, let's take a break now, and we'll be right back. Patty Greer journeyed to England to investigate crop circles, eventually becoming a filmmaker, chronicling this phenomena and serving as a kind of intermediary between the unknown creators and a humanity on the brink of global disaster. Hear her complete story by visiting Show 1, Patty Greer, Crop Circle Mysteries, in our Threshold Radio Archives in Vegas, AllNetRadio.com, and YouTube. Here's one of our songs.
She's an angel with a bended wing. You know that she is grounded so that she will sing, not fly away. She's an angel. She can make the wind do tricks all around on you. Autumn wind, all the angels flying low. Autumn love. You can feel it when you join.
New Galaxy Enterprises is a media company specializing in wide-ranging content like novels, nonfiction books, screenplays, commercial advertising, web content, etc. One of our most esteemed providers is illustrator Robert W. Zalo. I work on all my most important projects, like book covers, logos, web design elements, with Robert. As an illustrator, he worked on the Ignatz-nominated comic book, The Expert's Guide to Killing Things That Go Bump in the Night. His skills encompass advertising, magazine illustrations, gaming, comic books, TV production, and scenic painting. His clients include Comcast, Adelphia, Haven Talent, Forceworks, High Octane Theater, Star Creative Advertising. If you wish to contact Robert, go to johnnybluestar.com and let me know. That's johnnybluestar.com. For artist, illustrator Robert Zalo, an essential component of all the work we do. Maybe he can help you too.
The following is from West Side Warrior, the memoir of Ray Boylan, a Korean War veteran and crime fighter. He was there fighting in the world's coldest battlefield when the Chinese communists invaded.
Desperate squad members ran past our foxhole yelling, "Get the hell out of here! There's too many of them!" Again, we saw the Chinese soldiers charging in with opium-induced mindlessness, oblivious of our bullets. Again, we heard the bugles and whistles. Climbing out of our foxhole, Bob dropped two hand grenades behind us, and I threw one over my shoulder. Bullets whizzing by our heads, Bob and I became bolts of lightning flashing across the mountainside. Like a hideous film, desperate scenes like this played out on the Tokong Pass for 3 days. Sometimes I played in the scene. Sometimes I could only watch and wonder if it were real, or if I'd be suddenly jolted out of my trance by an RKO usher saying, "Hey, did you kids sneak in here?"
To acquire this book, Google westsidewarrior.boylan.kindle. Boylan is spelled B-O-Y-L-A-N. That's West Side Warrior, Boylan, Kindle.
One of the chief problems on the Trump side was the lack of backing of the Republican establishment for his nomination. And there were attempts to change the rules so that the popular vote he had acquired could still be put aside another candidate nominated. Paul Ryan, the Speaker of the House, threw in the towel rather late, but ultimately endorsed Trump, and also Chris Christie and Ben Carson, both of whom had been rather tremendously insulted. What do you think motivated these establishment politicians to stand firmly for someone they had so strongly rejected, like Ben Carson, as I mentioned, who had been really humiliated by Trump, or Ryan, who had taken strong objections to a stand against Mexican judge even after he did endorse him?
I think they had to. It's part of their pact with the Republican Party, and the leaders of the Republican Party pretty much put the screws to him and say, if you don't support your candidate, we won't support you.
Yeah, well, they've got to back the winner because they're not going to change over to the Democratic Party, right? So they got to back the winner, and the winner right now is Donald Trump. So they want to be there when all the prizes are handed out.
But it didn't affect Jeb Bush, right? And it didn't affect Cruz.
Well, Jeb Bush is from a dynasty. I mean, Cruz kind of wanted to straddle the line. I agree with Sanders. I mean, you don't have to endorse the person. It's a democracy. You can disagree, but he did congratulate Donald on his nomination. He just didn't come out and give him a big kiss like in the billboard.
Yeah.
People were mad. They booed him off the stage.
Yeah, it would seem like they might respect him because he was an opponent of Donald, but he had taken that pledge also. But
he was up there and did congratulate him, and he spoke.
Yeah,
what more do you want?
Yeah, I think that it shows.
It was
sort
such
of
a Donald Trump show. I mean, it was such a, and from the beginning when he comes out to "We Are the Champions" and the shadow reveals that it's him. I mean, it was ridiculous.
It's actually kind of funny.
He hadn't even been nominated yet. It's supposed to be a conventional. It was funny. It's supposed to be a convention, though. It's supposed to be a place for discourse. I mean, it was just a place for, I don't know,
hero worship.
Yeah.
Did it seem as the convention time approached that Trump often somewhat softened his positions a bit? It almost seemed like through various manipulations that he was actually trying to save as the candidate that cared for minorities, as of course if they were American. What do you think? Do you think he softened his position, like on banning the Muslims? Started to talk
I think
about
he's just learning how to be a politician, talk about both sides of his face.
Mm-hmm.
I think people are This is my view on the Democratic Party and their strategy. I think they purposely blow everything up to as much as they possibly can about things being about racism and whatever they can, because it works. That's what a lot of their party strategy is. And so now Donald Trump has some issues. He's an older white guy that's in a pretty traditional industry that talks and operates in ways that are not necessarily diverse. And he's getting a lesson learned. But I don't know if he's as bad as people are making him out to be, because I think they're blowing things out of proportion on purpose. But he needs to learn how to do a much better job at that.
I disagree. I think he's as bad as, I mean, maybe not as bad as the Democrats say he is, but he's bad. He's a xenophobe. He's a racist.
Many people of that generation.
To many white Anglo-Saxon Protestant people.
I mean, the culture is such that that's their, they just don't realize that they're like that.
And those are the people who are supporting him in earnest, and he really has to speak to them and tell them what they need to hear. That's what he does.
Yeah, he's an educated man, and he's been dealing with heads
of
foreign
nations.
For an
educated man,
he's
got a pretty poor vocabulary, Johnny.
Well, he's an educated man.
Well, it's the industry. I mean, go ahead.
He's associated with people in government of all countries. He's been in touch with CEOs for years. He's sophisticated enough and has made enough positive comments about minorities and so forth in the past that you have to think that he's actually maneuvering this, or had maneuvered it, so that he could get the nomination. Because the kind of people who are supporting him are generally people who are sort of blue collar and sort of are sympathetic with not liking certain other types of non-white people.
Yeah, well, he definitely came out and tried to grab the gay vote for sure.
Yes,
and which is kind of a weird thing. I didn't expect him to be so vocal about that.
Well, that's what makes me
good for him. Good for him.
But that's what makes me think it's not as bad as people like. It's just there's something weird there that isn't quite as it seems.
Well, it may be true
he doesn't know what he's doing.
Well, but you look at his kids, and his kids are just so well raised, for lack, I don't know how else to say it. They're just very put together. And you
well,
can't
let's
raise...
hope so, because it looks like they're going to be cabinet members if he makes it.
Oh, jeez.
And it's dangerous to talk about banning all Muslims. You're inviting terrorist responses. You're inviting people in this country to be scared of being overly surveyed.
It's also not cool to be. I mean, we need immigration reform. That's true. I mean, both parties have acknowledged that. But it's bad to create an anti-immigration feeling in America. We need immigrants. We were built on – the country was built on immigrants, okay? The Native Americans, there's not very many of them. It's mostly us immigrants and generations from immigrants. And, the present immigrants are doing the jobs that nobody else is going to do.
Well,
and
exactly. Everybody's an immigrant of some kind.
You're talking about the Hispanic or the Mexican.
Of course,
But people are blowing things out of proportion. Because, for example, Mexico being mad as heck about that wall and stuff, but they're creating a wall on their southern border.
Well, that's true.
You know, so you start. It's all hypocritical, and there's a lot of countries that have created walls to do that. And as far as banning all Muslims. Now, that's not, I mean, to just ban all Muslims outright, that's not good. But to be more careful and to say, okay, we know that there's
absolutely.
An issue. And to say, until we get a grip on this, and I think he said it in just such a poor way, until we get a grip on this, let's just not let them come in left and right. Let's stop it, get a grip on it, and then restart it.
Well, that's not how you do it.
The problem is they've got a national database that identifies everyone who's at risk, and then the FBI's got one as well. But none of the different organizations, none of the acronymic alphabet soup organizations work with each other. Well, they don't talk to each other. I mean, they either need an omnibusman agency or someone to collect you know, these different agencies together, which I thought they wanted to do, but they need some way to address this so it's not a bunch of agencies competing with each other.
Well, actually, and get something thus done. The government should be smaller.
The actual reality that I see is that what he should have said is that we're going to vigorously make sure nobody comes in this country who would need to be vetted in detail, because unless it's very obvious that they can be vetted easily, because we really do need to protect ourselves both on the borders and from people coming in who we don't know.
Yeah, but he didn't say that.
No, he didn't. I say
rapists, standing there at the border watching all these rapists cross.
Yeah,
it's ridiculous.
But what would be necessary?
He's got some. He's got some points, because with all these terrorist attacks and everything else going on, there is a point to say, until we get our act together, we have to stop. Let's just stop.
We don't stop. We don't stop at Muslims. We stop at everybody.
Problem. There's another problem.
I'd like to say
you
something.
You guys should. There's another problem, and that's that a lot of them are already here.
Well, yes. Yeah.
And now that they're calling for this, I don't know what to call it, homemade terrorism, where they're calling soldiers who are just basically people that agree with this idiotic ideology that killing someone is going to make a point. And they're taking cars and guns and whatever they can and going and killing people. They're already here.
I think that what we needed to do was vigorously, vet everybody and really close the borders now. I'm not talking about getting rid of people or deporting people, but that would require a tremendous more stepping up the actual legitimate organizations that would be screening these people. It doesn't mean having this kind of activity going on in airports, or it doesn't mean massive surveillance. It means real detective work and real structured.
Real work, not just show off.
Yeah. Not just show off work, and not the work that has the actual effect of destroying our citizens' rights, but taking advantage of what we know about investigating criminal activities. It's a much harder thing to do.
Well, let me give you an example of the no-fly list. How do you get put on that no-fly list? How do you get off of it?
It certainly should be something that should be done with a court. You should have a court. You should have a court order. If you're going to restrain people,
they don't. So let's say they don't like my policies. They don't like I'm just a pain in the butt. They're going to put me on a no-fly list, and so I can't finish doing. Let's say I got some business deal I'm doing in Europe. They just don't like me for some reason because I'm irritating them at the local level on some park issue they want, and now next thing you know, I'm on the no-fly list.
Yes,
I can't go over to Europe to finish my business dealings, and I can't get off the no-fly. That's what freedom, that's what the founding fathers were talking about.
Right. Well, listen, we're going to go for a break now, and we'll be right back with more of a dissection of what's been happening before and during the nominating process.
Patricia Welch is clearly one of the most accomplished singers living today. Recently, she created a wonderful CD set called Great Entertaining, Cocktails, Dinner, and Dessert with Patricia. We have two complete shows with Patricia, show number 4, Evolution of a Singer, and show number 14, Cocktails with Patricia. You can find them at our Threshold Radio Archives and YouTube. Here is one of her songs.
Spring is like on Jupiter and Mars.
This is Johnny Bluestar. I've worked as a lyricist with Patricia Welch for over 5 years, along with Russian composer Edgar Ahrens, a friend and colleague. Her ability as a singer is simply amazing. She brings a unique and dramatic flair to every song she sings. Over the next few months, we shall be releasing a number of these songs, part of an album called Hadley's Castle. Meanwhile, Patricia has been busy creating a super enjoyable collection of classic standards in an exciting 46-song, 3-CD collection.
Music for great entertaining introduces Cocktails, Dinner, and Dessert with Patricia Welch. 3 hours of continuous music. 46 of the all-time classic standards, spanning decades of hit songs. Going to a friend's home for dinner? Cocktails, Dinner, and Dessert with Patricia also makes the perfect hostess gift. This 3-CD compilation is the perfect background music that sets just the right mood for any dinner party.
I'm crazy for feeling so lonely. There was a boy, a very strange, enchanted boy.
To purchase this album, just go to patriciawelch.com/CD. That is patriciawelch.com/CD. You won't be disappointed.
It is the 15th century. El Tesoro de Cielo, a Spanish treasure ship, sends a scouting expedition to a strange island. Golden statues surrounding them prove the enormity of their find. Suddenly, hordes of ghoulish creatures with scaly green flesh and skeletal wings descend upon them from the sky.
What do you think of this, Rufio?
These creatures are fragile, Captain. We could take them with our swords.
They seem supernatural. Who knows what powers they possess?
Fallen angels, weakened by their treason.
My God, are you saying they're Nephilim, the devil's host?
I'm saying whatever they are, we can take them. Do any of you cowards dare join me?
Up against sharp knife-like nails and hideous fangs, the men's swords rip into slimy green flesh. Though black blood pours copiously from their half-naked bodies, creatures miraculously persist. Can the crew survive this bloody, cursed battle?
Find out more by Googling The Thrice Born, a new sci-fi supernatural novel by Carlos Lopez Avery and Johnny Bluestar. Google with the words Carlos Johnny Kendall, The Thrice Born. That's Carlos Johnny Kendall, The Thrice Born.
Well, listen, if Trump softened his positions before the convention, did Hillary almost do backflips as she moved forward on things like the minimum wage, student loans, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, and other matters? What do you think?
I think she had to make a deal to try to get Sanders supporters because I don't think she can win the election without him. So there was some negotiation done, and Sanders actually made some of his points into Democratic platform.
I thought it was interesting that when he presented himself at the convention at the final moments, he was saying, Hillary Clinton understands that the yeah. FTT, he said that before when he first, you know, he started to beginning to endorse her.
Yeah, when it's obvious that Obama is in favor of the TPP, it's, you know, that's interesting that he did that dig.
Well, yeah, he's purposely doing that to force her to have a certain mm-hmm. position. I think mm-hmm. that's great.
Yeah, me too. I thought his speech was fantastic. I thought, you know, that he made the points about you know this election is I did this, you know, I'm disappointed, but I did this to make some points, and the points are that the middle class is becoming the poor class, and the elites becoming the only one that's making any money in the country, and went on to all the other issues that are important to him and said them all. And I think it was great the way he did it.
Yeah. I think the power is that once she gets in office, she has to be more careful than probably any president has ever been about everything she says and does, because people will be watching her like a hawk.
I think Trump is in the same boat.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Definitely, you're right.
I mean, there's so many things that he can't deliver on because they're just undoable.
Well, that's what all, You have to admit, that's what all politicians do during this cycle. And then
they promise all kinds of stuff they can't do.
Yeah, you could go through every single past president and it's the same way, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. But part of it is they just can't. You know, you look at what they say, they could fight for it, but they don't have the power.
Well, I don't think there's ever been.
For example, there's some things that he can do that I'm afraid that he's going to do, like impose tariffs on Chinese imports and stall the world economy and stop issuing visas for 150 days. I mean, those kind of things scare the crap out of me.
Well, yeah, your main problem is that, you know, like with the tariffs, you can't just put on these tariffs because there ain't no infrastructure, manufacturing and infrastructure here to fall back on. That's a good point.
You
it's
know,
going to take a long time.
How are these people to work if there's no factories that are producing
anything? Well, I understand where he's coming from. We're matching the government subsidies that China's giving their factories with tariffs. Mm-hmm. And so we're balancing that out. That makes sense to me, you know, because China's subsidizing all these things so that we can't compete. And so
but it's going to hit all the already poor consumer too hard.
I agree with
that. That's the problem. Yeah,
I agree with that. And I think there's other more positive ways that we can do things, like really support our high tech industry, really support the areas of the future where we really can dominate,
where we excel, the stuff that we make. We can really support that. You're right. I agree.
We need to have contextual trade agreements, not free trade agreements, because they need to be customized to each different country that we're working with.
I agree. And you know, I would add, Johnny, also, they shouldn't be customized to what corporation wants to make money. You know, they should have, if we're going to have a trade agreement, it should be balanced. It shouldn't be just for corporate profiteering.
And it shouldn't just be for American profiteering, right? I mean,
That's part of it. But the other part is we've got to pay attention to our standards, like our child labor laws, our laws not to offer poisoned food. I mean, we can't obviously have to have standards, and those standards have to be in those agreements.
Ultimately, I think that if you're going to have a world that actually works for everybody, you're going to have something like you're going to have some kind of trade zones. You're going to have to really look carefully on how you set that up so that that every country will have a shot. And so that if a country's economy is failing because it's an underdeveloped country, for instance, we should be helping in a positive way, not setting them up for debt bondage.
Well, that's what we do now.
That's what we do now.
So, following the convention speeches, a new kind of surrealism took the stage. This was when Melania Trump was accused of plagiarizing Michelle Obama's speech. And I think that we should talk about this, not just about the problem with plagiarism, but actually the amount of media attention that it was given to this reality and actually why it happened. And, you know, it took a long time, but eventually Melania's speechwriter, a long-term ally and writer for her husband, admitted publicly she had taken notes on Michelle's speech and accidentally inserted passage from the speech, from Michelle's speech into the speech verbatim. Let's just look at this one because there's others.
Yeah. From a young age, my parents impressed on me the values that you work hard for what you want in life.
And Barack and I were raised with so many of the same values. Like, you work hard for what you want in life.
That your word is your bond, and you do what you say and keep your promise. That you treat people with respect.
That your word is your bond, that you do what you say you're gonna do. That you treat people with dignity and respect.
We want our children in this nation to know that the only limit to your achievements is the strength of your dreams and your willingness to work for them.
We want our children and all children in this nation to know that the only limit to the height of your achievements is the reach of your dreams and your willingness to work hard for them.
What does it mean? Why was it so important? And what does it show about the process of these people copying so many Democratic sort of sound bites verbatim from other people.
I don't think it's a meaningful copy. I mean, what they copied was something that was pretty generic and pretty awesome. I mean, it was just a really what everybody wants for their children and how to be a good person. So what was copied was kind of cool, and it doesn't really have much meaning towards policy. So it's in the end, it doesn't mean anything. And if anything, it means that their speechwriters were sloppy and they have some cleaning up to do with their speechwriters.
Well, I heard one asking.
They could have just attributed it to Michelle Obama, because those were almost her exact words. As Michelle Obama said, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
That fixes it.
that would fix them too.
They're not policy. They're great words. I don't know why they would have possibly copied it. I think that's dumb. But it's kind of a trivial thing, I think.
Well, that's not the only claim of plagiarism about her speech. Trump's son was also said to have plagiarized some phrases, but in his case, his speechwriter said the passages in question were taken from articles that the speechwriter had written. So it's okay for him to plagiarize himself and give it to a leading speech in a convention. But here's another example.
There was other forms of repetition beyond just Melania Trump. And so we're going to play two videos here. You can play them back to back. So Daryl Glenn, Senate candidate in Colorado, and then Tom Cotton, who I'm sure that you heard of, one of the big up-and-comers in the Republican Party, had callbacks to previous Democratic speeches of their own. So let's play those two videos now.
Mr. President, I have a message. This is not about black America, white America, or brown America.
There is not a black America and a white America and Latino America and Asian America.
This is about the United States of America.
There's the United States of America.
I have a message to deliver, and let me say it loud and clear. Help is on the way.
To all who serve in our armed forces today, I say help is on the way.
And let me say again, this time directly to our troops in a Trump-Pence administration and with a Republican Congress, help is on the way.
We can do better, America can do better, and help is on the way. America can do better, and help is on the way.
Okay, so there you see Daryl Glenn delivering something very similar, obviously, to Obama's big speech, for his big introductory speech from 2004, and then Tom Cotton calling back to the big closing line of John Kerry during 2000.
At least Melania's speech, like, and Michelle Obama's speech, like, nobody, I mean, apparently that one guy did. Who remembered it? What was his name?
That was Jared Hill.
Like, apparently he remembered it, but, like, we don't remember. But, like, everybody remembers there's not a red America, there's not a blue America, there's one America. It just seems like you'd know that one was an Obama one.
That's the fourth example of plagiarism coming from this campaign. How do we evaluate it? Is it because somehow that these people are seemingly dependent, accidentally somewhat or not, on the power of democratic rhetoric?
Well, I think it's like I mentioned before, everything's already been said. It's pretty minimal, because it's basic sound bites that, you know, doesn't really have anything to do with originality. And
okay, so we'll let
like, USA.
Well,
right?
We're going to let them go.
I don't think it was that big of a deal.
Okay. Far more important.
The bigger deal was the fact that the press made such a big deal out of it.
Yes.
What were they doing? I mean, what the heck? What were they doing? They were trying to, you know, make the something that I don't think was a big deal. They probably didn't think it was that big of a deal, but they were making it into a big deal to make them look bad.
Yeah.
And I don't understand. Focus on things that are more important. But this comes back to the average voter isn't all that educated. And so maybe it is a big deal to the average person. I don't know, but it shouldn't be.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to get into far more important things in a few minutes, because there are issues surrounding this email scandal that really, I think, need to be discussed and that point to possibilities of further corruption, but also point to either the strange presence and absence of the press in this particular situation. So we're going to take a break now. We'll be right back. Here's a selection from Edgar Arend's instrumental called Different Worlds. I've worked with Russian composer Edgar Arend for quite a few years, building an inventory of songs, many of which feature singer-performer Patricia Welch. We will soon be releasing these songs, components of an album and a musical in progress called Hadley's Castle. When Edgar and I first got together, I was amazed by the brilliance of his musical scores created for movies, TVs, and animations. Here is a sample of the work he did on the Russian TV series, available now on Amazon, called The Secret Agent's Memoir, which had two seasons. This score is called Escape and was created for the first season. I am very pleased to say that Bridge of Light Productions, a division of New Galaxy Enterprises, is proud to be the contact point for television and film companies seeking information about this amazing composer's work. If you're in the entertainment business and wish to know more, contact me at johnnybluestar@gmail.com. That's johnnybluestar@gmail.com.
Boots in Manhattan is a coming-of-age novel by Ray Boylan and Johnny Bluestar. It is about a young Tom Boots Raymond who grows up in New York in the 1940s, who was a member of a street gang.
My friends and I were about to start our own game of stickball when Rabbit Lacey, the head of the Rattlers, came up to us and tried to move in on our game. We were called dwarves, the youngest members of the stupid gang.
Hey, Kevin, I need you to get some gloves and some stuff I left at my place.
No, this is our game.
Hey, are you my good little dwarf or what?
You've been calling me a dwarf since I was six. We're not your personal slaves, pal.
Hey, what is this? A dwarf rebellion? All right, big guy, we ditched the dwarf thing. We make you guys regular rattlers.
No, it's too late.
He looked at Jay and me. We looked away. Rabbit was now angry, and he pushed Kevin hard with the palms of his hand. Kevin tried to ram him in the stomach, but he stepped aside, throwing Kevin into the curb where he fell to the ground, bleeding profusely at the knee. Still, he managed to get up.
My street.
Kevin shouted at Rabbit, pointing at him with an angry index finger.
Find out more by Googling Boots in Manhattan, a 1940s coming-of-age novel, part one of the novel series The Foot Soldier by Ray Boylan and Johnny Bluestar. Google with the words Boots in Manhattan, Ray Johnny Kindle. That's Boots in Manhattan, Ray Johnny Kindle.
My company, New Galaxy Enterprises, is a California corporation specializing in the creation of media and promotional content. We are focused on original, innovative projects that are good for humanity. These projects could be nonfiction books or novels, fictional screenplays or documentary content, websites and website content, commercial advertising content for print, audio, or video products on the internet, television, or radio, musical scores for advertising, television, or film, video, audio editing, etc. We want to promote products and projects that support the environment, encourage a healthy experience in living, developing, nurturing, and useful technology, and offering platforms for positive, socially constructive entertainment or informative, transformative media. Our experience in creating a variety of products like this is rather vast, and we offer client-based and collaborative products, as well as the opportunity of active investors to join us in the creation and promotion of proprietary products, some of which are in latter stages of development. For more information, go to www.newgalaxyenterprises.com. That's www.newgalaxyenterprises.com. If you're interested in talking to us, just fill out the contact sheet and we will get back with you. There is no question that everything about the American political system has been shaken up this year, although moral challenges are always hiding behind the comforting or inspiring words of our politicians. Somehow, the possible spidery reality has crawled out of the cupboard this time. If you really have paid attention, given our two candidates, we should have very deep questions about what they're really about. As I hear quite often, Trump might be quite different than what he appears to be to some. The self-aggrandizing, pathologically cruel bigot, and despite all the scandal and seeming criminality, suggesting a strangely disguised capitalist mercenary, Hillary is really golden on the inside. The truth is, although I've heard all the allegations, she always appears that way when she speaks. Unfortunately, I know the difference between trusting appearance to be the best gauge of reality. Whoever Hillary really is, for Sanders' followers, their only hope is to have the strength to hold her feet to the fire, to make her keep her commitment to the 2016 Democratic political platform. Personally, I am praying she is golden on the inside. But her recent adventures in foreign policy have not proven that to me, and so many other things. Thanks so much for visiting us today, and we will go out with a song that Edgar Ahrens and I wrote for Patricia Welch. It's called Love Never Withers.
Make me cry. I remember the joyous gleam that it stole from my eyes. I remember that day when the wind swept away life's dear comfort and warmth.
Can't fail this promise again.